Okay.
Hey, it's on cold Saturday morning. Good morning, I'm Tom. I apologize. That was a little tinny. But it didn't matter because the young man called Lincoln Hensley playing the banjo. And, man, that's good. And the violin part sounded okay. But I accept tinniness when it's good banjo playing. Okay, so last week we had Jim Dill on. We were talking about ticks and bugs and stuff. And this week I went to take a shower Thursday night. And I dropped my pantaloons. I removed my pantaloons to take a shower. And I looked down on my leg, and there's a thing, and it ain't moving. And it's a, can I say freaking tick? Sure I can. It's my radio show. Stuck. It has attached onto my leg. And I'm not happy. Now, it wasn't there yesterday, so the day before, excuse me. So my wife's already in bed. I said, where's the Jim Dill tick spoon? I've had multiple Jim Dill tick spoons all over the place. And, of course, I can't find the darn thing. Finally, I found it on the stairs. It's on the steps going up to the second floor. Don't ask. Don't ask. It was a convenient place where I knew it would be. It took a while. And I'm trying not to freak out. Now, I'm a wuss when it comes to ticks. And leeches, too. I've never had a leech attached to me. I think I've had one tick on me before that actually attached. And I got that sucker off and I dispatched it. It went to wherever ticks go to, the gates of hell, as far as I'm concerned. And Pete's all upset. He wants me to call the doctor. I said, it wasn't that long. I put Neosporin on it. And, you know, I'm on blood thinners. But so I don't know if that's good or bad. I was hoping the blood thinners would kill the tick. But I don't think it did. Well, I know it didn't because it was not happy when I detached it from my leg. So Pete mentioned to me, he's got permethrin spray for your pantaloons. Guess what I did yesterday morning? My pantaloons, my shoes, my socks, all got sprayed. No ticks. What a great year for ticks. All right, enough said. I'm done with the tick talk. Oh, my God. Oh, I just, no. And I'm trying to remain calm, and looking down at this thing is stuck on me. Now, you live out in the woods, you deal with it. I was not in the woods on Thursday. I was mostly in the office, the shop, the driveway. I did go out back where it's all been mowed and it's very short, and I tiptoe around anything that looks like grass or something a tick would be on. And, all right, enough said. I was a little upset. Can you tell? So a lot going on. I got 2 weeks of things to report. And the first one is a week or so ago, I got a new water heater. So, excuse me, since we moved into the house, which was March, there is a boiler, I guess I call it a combi boiler. It does boiler and tankless hot water, runs on propane. Propane ain't the cheapest fuel. There's a little bit of a time lag on the instantaneous water heater. We're not happy with it. And the house had an electric water heater, and you could use either or, except the electric water heater looked pretty far gone. And I figured, you know what, let's just replace it now. And I'm not putting in a heat pump water heater. I didn't have the headroom in the basement, actually. Getting it into the basement would have been a nightmare. So I almost went in the opposite direction. I ordered a Marathon water heater. Marathon is actually a company owned by Rheem, who makes a heat pump water heaters. But this is just straight electric, but it's all plastic. And it's been around, God, they've been around for about 30 years. And they come with a lifetime warranty. I'm tired of dealing, a few times I've had to deal with them, not many, but dealing with water heaters that spring a leak because it's never a convenient time. It's always a mess. So really was not much. It was more expensive than a standard water heater, but not that much more considering I probably wouldn't live long enough to have to replace it. But I had my past house, I had put a new Rheem water heater in, and it failed in 2 years. And it was under warranty, but there's all that hassle. And I'm just going to get Marathon. I don't want to deal with it. And I'm going to get somewhere, here we go again, a heat pump water heater that's independent of the tank, because that's the way it should be done. Now, I know the all-in-ones, I've got one, it was a year ago. I put one in my old house, and, you know, with the discount, it wasn't much money, $400, something like that. Right now, I think Home Depot's doing them for $349 with efficiency main rebates. And that's a great deal. But I don't want it. I just have this thing. Unfortunately or fortunately, Nile, who heat pump manufacturer in Brewer, made that independent unit. They had the Nile Therm, then they had the Geyser, and they're not making a replacement for it, but I wish they would, because to me that's a lot more efficient in the sense that if the heat pump fails or the tank fails, either one, you don't replace the whole schmear. And if you've ever wrangled a heat pump water heater into a basement, you know what I'm talking about. They're not the lightest things. The Marathon is extremely light. And amazingly light, actually. And I can't say it was a lot of fun to install, but it was pretty simple because, A, I could move it around. Pete helped me bring it in the basement because we do have logistical issues getting it in there. But I got more to tell you. I've just started on the water heater. It's but it's done. It's working. And there's a report from the boss lady, too. So we're going to take a quick break here. It's 8:15. It is hot and cold. The phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. We'll be right back. Oh, man, that's some good stuff right there.
I know when to go out. Things done.
It's 8:20. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. You knew that. I hope you did anyway. Water heater, went to put it. There's an old cistern in the basement
wall was knocked out. Water, good place for water heater because it's got a concrete floor, which the rest of the basement does not have. So I had to empty the old water heater with a 5-gallon bucket, and so I got my aerobic workout up and downstairs carrying water, and I got the water heater out. It had already been unplumbed. I disconnected the wiring, and there was an area in the basement I had not cleaned out for cleanup week, and it was the cistern. There was old wood in there, and there was compost there, so I cleaned it all out. And put the thing in there, found it, got it leveled up, and the plumbing, you know, is nothing. So, I could run Pike's tubing till the cows come home. It's just simple. So I plumbed it up. But the wiring was another issue. I have to run 10-gauge wire to the water heater. It takes a 30-amp breaker. And there was wiring already in place. It was 10-gauge wire, 10-gauge Romex. Went into a timer and a shutoff, but I have a new service panel, and it's further away than the one that is the old water heater was tied into. So, and I don't like to splice wire like that. I just like to have a home run from panel to the unit. So, I knew it was going to be expensive. I look up 10-gauge, 10-2 Romex, and I'm like, oh, God, it was $150, whatever, for what I needed. And I said, well, okay, hold on. Let's go back. Tom has got coils of 10-gauge THHN wire. All I got to do is buy conduit, which is cheap. Going to look very professional. I got conduit in the basement like I'm some kind of schmo. So, I did the conduit, and I ran it. So this was a Sunday morning. I stopped Saturday. I know my limits. You know, I'm kind of, it's been a long day Saturday. So I started to run some conduit. I said, let's stop here. Let's work on, it was just some stuff I had to move around. So Sunday morning, you know, I'm up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and ran the conduit. Got it all hooked into the disconnect switch. And I've got 3 conductors to run through. So I hook them up. It took a while to get the string through with the vacuum, but I got, I've got the twine that you use to pull through the conduit was not long enough. That was frustrating. It's been cut and used and cut and anyway. But anyway, I got it through, tie it to the conductors, and we get the cable through and got it all wired up. And it was about noontime again. It seems that every Sunday project is a half day, you know, starting in the morning, ending at noon. And it works fine. Did a little bit of rejiggering on the plumbing, so we got hot water a little bit faster logistically than we did before. So that worked out well. And I got to clean the basement because I love cleaning old basements with dirt floors with compost. And all the little critters. And amazingly, in this old house, even before we had spray foamed, there was no sign of any rodents. And that's nothing short of a Christmas miracle, I want to tell you. So that one got knocked out. And then I was doing a little projects. I said, okay, rest of Sunday, let me knock out some small projects. I was doing baseboard and stuff. But it's been so long. I've told you so for so many weeks. Oh, I'm doing the kitchen. And the kitchen is down to a few things that needed to be done. And the big one was we have a window seat. And I've been looking around I wanted to do oak for the seat part, the part where your posterior is located, the broad, excuse me, horizontal surface. And so I want to do oak. And I went around, and I'm like, just been screwing around, spinning my wheels, trying to figure out what I want to do. I'm looking at, you know, guys who saw lumber, and that's all green, and it's rough sawn. I can plane it. I got a planer, but it's not going to be dry enough. So I finally said, let's just go to the lumber yard and get oak. And I measured it up for the 10th time. And I said, okay, 1x6, 3 pieces of 1x6 is the width I need. And as it turns out, with minimal cutting, I mean, there is cutting. It's a bay window, so there's four. And it turned out the angles are actually a true 45 degrees. I mean, another Christmas miracle right there. So I got the wood. Oh, I'm unloading the wood. I've got a 10-foot, a 12-foot, and a 6-foot piece. And I've got my Prius, right? So it's sticking out the window. So I pull up to the garage. I pull out the first two pieces. The last piece is the 12-footer. I'm sliding my hand across this beautiful oak. And I look down, and there's blood gushing from my hand. You know, these days, everything is wrapped in plastic. And when it came from somewhere, from the mill, they apparently had it wrapped in plastic and stapled it. Well, when they took it apart, the staple remained in the wood, but it became straight like a scalpel. And I stuck that sucker into my hand and immediately vast amounts of blood. And my first reaction is, get away from the wood! You just paid all this money! And so I grabbed some, I had tissues, you know, in the car. I grabbed those, and I'm erupting really good amount of blood. And run in the house and put a Band-Aid on it, put some Neosporin, and I didn't even look at it. I was just trying to clean it and get it Band-Aid on so I'm not erupting. And it stopped almost immediately because it was just a really deep puncture. Beautiful, beautiful. You know, I couldn't have done it any better if I was trying to do an operation on my hand. And went back, took the godforsaken staple out of the wood. And I thought, well, I didn't know how bad or good it was, and it turned out it wasn't bad. So I was able to proceed, got all the wood cut that night. I said, I'm going to stop here now. It's getting late. Next day, which it's Thursday? Yeah, it was tick day, which will be the denotation for Thursday, June 10th or whatever it was, 11th, from now on. And I biscuited and glued together with my tight bond glue. I had gathered up every clamp I have, and I have these really nice Formica tables that I use for banjo work that are flat, so everything's clamped down. And put it together. I had shown my wife just the boards in place, and she was kind of impressed. So last night, the last parts got glued together because it's kind of a C-shaped seat. And my wife walked in the kitchen last night, and again, my woodworking has impressed my wife. And I derive great amount of pleasure out of the fact that I've actually impressed her with something I've been doing. And it does look nice. I can't wait to get a finish on it. So it got glued up last night. Today will be sanded and sealed, and that'll be done. And that leaves one thing left in the kitchen. And that is the chimney. We've got tile to put on the chimney, which is a cinder block chimney. And there's always the dilemma. It can't be simple. Somebody put drywall compound on the cinder block and made it look like stucco. And I'm pretty sure I can't cheat and just stick tile right on that because it's all going to fall off. So I've got to get all that drywall compound off. I can't wait. But we're going to take another break. We've got we've got things going on here. So we'll be right back.
Nashville cats play clean.
Okay, so they're still cats, right? The guitar picking cats, and that's I'm not sure there's any guitar picking cats over Bangor, you Maine, but Chelsea's there with a lot of great animals. Good morning, Chelsea.
Good morning. Hey, you never know; they might have some special talents that we don't see.
Well,
we do. So
yeah,
maybe
there's
we
a
have
lot
some guitar picking cats
on the internet. There's a lot of singing dogs, so I mean, you know, we
you
got
know?
That. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. I have such a goofball to talk about today. Let me tell you about this handsome boy. His name is Chubbs. Chubbs is a 130-pound bulldog mix. Oh, yeah. Go right to the Bangor Humane Society website. You can kind of follow along and see this handsome boy. Man, he is a big boy. He is so sweet. If you've ever wanted a 130-pound best friend to share your couch and watch Scooby-Doo with, this guy is it. He is so silly. He actually has his own room. He's far too large for a kennel.
He deserves his own room, I can size.
He does. Yeah, he does. He actually has a TV in his room, so he does watch TV, and he really enjoys Scooby-Doo, we found. That's kind of his favorite thing.
That's a hoot.
Oh, he's so funny. He's a giant. He's a big sweetheart with an even bigger heart. He loves attention. He is happiest spending time with those he loves, and he will just give you all of the love. Now, in his previous home, we do know that he lived with a Chihuahua, which is a big, drastic difference than him.
Oh, my goodness.
And he did very well with that friend. We do obviously not know how he would do with a big dog like him. Mm. So we do ask that all dogs in the home come in to meet at Bangor Humane Society just to make sure everybody's comfy, as well as cats. We don't know how he does with cats. He might just want to play. Might kind of freak him out. So just slow, positive introductions. Now, we talked about it. He's 130 pounds. He is incredibly strong, and he's very determined. If he sees something he really wants to go play with, he is going to want to go see it. So he is going to need somebody that has that confidence and ability to handle a 130-pound unit of a dog. He just is a big sweetheart. He wants to play. He wants to see the world. But again, he doesn't quite know that he's a big dog. I think he's kind of encompassed his life with the Chihuahua, and I think maybe he thinks he's a Chihuahua.
Yeah.
He is clearly not. He is a big boy, so just kind of understanding with kiddos, he may accidentally get zoomies and knock your kiddos over. Nothing of his own fault. He's just a big boy, and he gets butt wiggles. So
yeah,
he's kind of understanding that, and he's just a lot of a dog. So having lots of room for him and just understanding and, you know, working with him as he, you know, goes into a new environment. But he's a goofball. I love this dog. He's great. And we had so many wonderful dogs, too. So,
I was
so
looking.
Many friends right
yeah,
now.
I was looking this morning. They're all look great and happy. And man,
beautiful.
You know, it seems to me that big dogs like this don't understand that they're big dogs.
Oh yeah.
Whether it's a Great Dane or it's
they
a guy
really
like
don't.
Chubbs, you know, they just they identify. I think with the Chihuahua or maybe a Beagle or something like that.
Yeah, they think they're a lap dog, and then they'll try to sit in your lap and. Yeah, it's a little bit of a struggle with that.
Wow, 130 pounds. Not quite my way. You know, I think about how would you control? You have to really train your dog well.
Yeah.
And I think that's critical for an animal like this.
Yeah, and, you know, treats are vital when you're training, especially with that kind of direction on the leash. When you see something he really wants to play with, having that treat, kind of working with that training, and then eventually he'll go see that friend. But, you know, kind of working with him and being patient. He is a big baby. He doesn't realize it. Again, he thinks he's the size of a Chihuahua, so kind of understanding, okay, We're going to work with you, bud, and figure it out. But
Chubbs will be introducing you to many new friends, whether you like it or
yes.
not.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you're going to meet some people.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's great. So open at noon, one today.
To 6. Yes, 1 to 6 p.m.
And Bangor Humane's on Mount Hope Avenue. It's worth it. I think it's worth a trip just to go meet Chubbs.
Yeah.
You're in town doing something.
Yeah, just to see him.
Yeah, yeah. Go to his room and watch Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, you can watch Scooby-Doo with him. It's pretty great. Yeah.
I love that. That's awesome. All right, Chelsea, thank you. Appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yeah, sounds
Thanks.
Great. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye. I love it. That's awesome. Let's see. Let's check the message machine, 601-207-4478. Morning, Tom. Does deficiency main rebate apply to people who live off-grid? Oh, that's a good question. We just ordered a Mr. Cool mini split online. It was expensive. Rebate would have been nice. Yeah. It'd be worth checking. The problem is, like with the Mr. Cool, I bought a mini split myself. And there's no rebate. No rebate for DIY stuff, which I think is unfortunate. I kind of understand that they want to put in properly. But I've done one prior to this. I do work on AC on cars. I have a little bit of a clue, and you don't need that much more than a little bit of a clue, a set of gauges, a vacuum pump, and some understanding. I'm going to say with Mr. Cool, which is going to be a DIY, you're paying for it. There's no rebate. So, you can check. It's worth checking, but it would have to be installed by somebody else. And there is a price spread there for sure. You know, when you're paying a contractor, you're paying for labor, you're paying to get it done right, hopefully. Example, I did get the heat. That was on my list of things to discuss. I did get my mini split up and running, and it was a little challenging. I got a 24,000 BTU an hour mini split, single unit, single indoor outlet, and I got that big unit because of the heat load for the space it was going in, which was the kitchen. Kitchen's hard to heat space. I will be replumbing the radiators, and it'll work better at running off the standard heating system. But I wanted it to stand alone. I wanted it to be comfortable. And it's been a very uncomfortable space the whole time I've owned the property from January on. I had to move a window, okay? Because I think I told the story. The indoor unit overlapped the window by 10 inches. And I had space to move the window over, so I slid the window over 10 inches. And it then gave me the cavity to run the refrigerant lines outdoors. And the refrigerant lines coming off the inside unit were quite flexible. They're corrugated, so they're easy to bend and hook up to the line set. The line set is straight. Soft copper, soft being a relative term. There's two lines. There's the vapor line, which was 5/8 tubing, and then the liquid line, which was maybe 1/4 inch. And so the 1/4 inch line is nothing. That's easy to handle. The 1/2 inch line, I knew was going to be an issue because the one I did in my office, which was 3/8 for the vapor line, I started to kink it. I didn't do a real bad job, but I knew I was in for it with this one, and went ahead and very gently I understood. And this is a line set, so they're pre-flared, so you can't put a traditional tubing bender, the coil springy thing, on it. So I'm bending very, very gently, trying to get things aligned, and I could just feel it start to collapse the tube. I took the insulation off and got it so it would hook on, and I said, no, it's just twisted too. It just ain't happening. So I weighed my options. One was to just fire it up as it was, But it was so restricted, I really didn't want to do that. So I wound up, and you know, if I set it up, the unit's pre-charged. If I set it up, you know, evacuate it and go through the routine. Once I opened those valves to let the refrigerant charge into the whole system, now if it ain't working right, I lost the refrigerant charge because I have to fix it anyway. So I said, okay, let's cut it out and do the repair now, which I did. Vacuum tested it, held the vacuum. Opened it up, let it go, you know, turned it on, and then tested for leaks, no leaks, and it's running fine. And it's fantastic. My wife was incredibly impressed. It's always impressive when you have a heat pump and you turn it on for the first time, a mini split. So it unfortunately, no rebate. And, you know, that's quite unfortunate, actually. It was for me. It's expensive. Let's see. Message here. I've tried everything. This is the only thing that gets rid of ticks. Just spread around granules around the perimeter of your property, which I did yesterday, as a matter of fact. Every time it rains, it activates the granules. I spread this every year. Works fine. Anyway, I did that yesterday after I sprayed my pantaloons with the permethrin. So, can you clarify what a tick spoon is more effective than a robust set of tweezers? Tick spoon looks like a little spoon that's really deep, has a little V cut in it. Google it. You'll see a picture. And you just kind of scoop under the tick, and the V goes around the tick and allows you to extract it from your person. It's fun. Everybody should use a tick spoon. You should have a tick spoon. I have more than one. I just couldn't find them, you know, in the heat of the moment. Let's see. Tom, thanks for your advice. A few weeks ago, we just blew in 12 inches of cellulose into my attic. I now have gone from R19 to R59 or so. Whole job took 6 hours with one person outside loading and one other person in the attic blowing. Cost me less than $1,000 for my 16 by 56 dwelling. Good. Congratulations. Everybody should do cellulose once in their life. It's not miserable, but it's not great fun. The novelty does wear off pretty quickly when you're up in the attic, especially if it's hot. But it is worthwhile, and it's a cheap date in terms of being able to drop $1,000 and do that kind of insulating in a couple hours, 6 hours. But you know, I sounds like he probably took some good breaks, which is good. And obviously, you always wear a mask when you're doing stuff like that. Oh, let's see. Tom, I got a 2023 Toyota RAV4 Prime with 45,000 miles on it. Good car. Bring it in for service every 5,000. We drive a lot to Massachusetts 12 times a year. Question with the Prime electric braking system and that we don't stop and go travel, should we have to replace the brakes and rotors? I don't think so. Should you always replace the rotors every time you do a brake job? They should last a little bit longer. I won't say they last a lot longer, but in theory they should. But that isn't always reality. You don't necessarily have to replace the rotors when you do a brake job. It just depends on the condition of the rotors. Is there a lip? Do they at least need to be machined? And for the cost of machining, you can put new rotors on. If you're paying a dealer to do it, you might want to check with a independent garage. This is not a big deal to do brakes on any hybrid vehicle. And you may find, well, I know you'll find some economy there going to a regular garage and get a quote first. If you're comfortable, it can be a DIY project. Every so often I get into it and I said, you know what, I'm putting this back together and I'm sending it to somebody. I know what I want to do and what I don't want to do. And if you're not comfortable, obviously, any number of mechanics will do that job for you and do a fine job. I'm in the process of doing the window seat. It got me thinking, you know, I used a tight bond glue, glued it together, the great stuff. I used a bunch of other adhesives over the week. I had some trim that was in a really tough place. There wasn't a lot of nailing surface, and I wound up gluing a piece in. I used both super glue and Gorilla Glue Max construction adhesive, and it got me thinking about the fact that, you know, 100 years ago, when 160 years ago, my house was built, they didn't have a lot of adhesives. Basically, the only thing they probably were using was hide glue, which was made from horsehide, which is the old thing about, you know, you take the horse to the glue factory. And that worked reasonably well. The nice thing about hide glue, which is still used today, used a lot for musical instruments, is by heating it, it's heat activated in terms of becoming a liquid. It's otherwise a solid. If you're trying to take apart a violin, say, or even a guitar, heat will allow you to undo the glue joint. The window seat I did, I don't want to undo the glue joint. So I've used a tight bond, and, you know, there's a lot. The one place I don't want to use glue or adhesive, and a good reason to do it, but reason not to do it, is if you ever have to take something apart. And I think my wife actually asked me, are you going to glue down the seat, the window seat, to the to the frame? I said, no, because if I ever have to get in there, I will destroy the oak woodwork I did trying to get it unglued, because it ain't going to unglue. I've had the experience once. I don't want it ever again of removing a subfloor from floor joists that were glued and nailed. And, man, I wound up cutting the flooring out to the joist and then working the joist trying to get it unglued. It was a mess, and it was miserable work. So I pick and choose what I want to glue and don't want to glue, but it is extraordinarily convenient. And, boy, you think about 160 years ago, the folks who built these buildings crudely with crude tools, for the most part, did a really nice job, did an amazing job. And, there's still those workmen around, those craftsmen, but not as many. Power tools and adhesives and stuff let people like me get away with doing things that look otherwise really good. I did have an experience this week where doors, with the humidity starting to creep up, I've had some doors binding. And one in particular was our new bathroom door. Just started to bind. It got worse and worse as the week went on. And finally, it was to a point where I said, you know what? We're not going to be able to close the door soon. So I took it off I think it was yesterday morning. And I had picked up a cheap, small hand plane. I don't have any. I think I've got an old hand plane somewhere in the shop. But I picked up a cheap, modern hand plane for doing doors. And so I literally took the door off the hinges, or I took the pins out, took the door outside and planed it so I wasn't making a huge mess inside, and brought it back in. It's fine. And then I had an upstairs door, which was an old door, another bathroom door, oddly enough, again, humidity, and it was binding. And it's been challenging to figure out where it's binding. I mean, usually you can look at it and you can see there's no gap. And I had taken a piece of paper and run it through where the door comes together to the frame to try to find where it was binding. And I found a spot, and I took the door off, and I planed it down, and the door closed better, but it was still binding. There was another spot up at the top on the horizontal surface, so the door's got to come off again. And these doors, these old doors, just are half hinges, so you just lift it up and it comes off. But it's easy to get it off the hinge. Getting it back on, especially by yourself, is kind of hilarious. And there's some colorful language that has to happen to make it work. But I have that gift, I guess. We got to take a break here in just a minute. We got Pete coming up next hour. He didn't win any primary, I don't think. I haven't seen anything in the paper with his name in it, but who knows? What else we got? I got flashing. I had flashing made up for fascias and soffits, and it's white steel, and it's heavy, which is what I wanted. But now I got to put it up, and I think it's going to be a two-person deal. I don't think I'm doing that one by myself just because it's a little bit unwieldy. But it's going to be fast, I think, he said optimistically. We'll see how that one plays out. We'll take the break. We come back. More to talk about. It's hot and cold, Saturday morning. Don't go away. You know, there's a video of this song, Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard, and I'm old enough to remember Merle Haggard singing Okie from Muskogee, and the opening line was, "We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee." And you know, the funny thing was, years ago, when that song was out, what was it, 1970, something like that, 71, I was at an Arlo Guthrie concert. And Arlo sang Okie from Muskogee because his family's from the Guthries are from Muskogee. And he says, I asked Merle why you don't smoke marijuana. And I'm not endorsing this. I don't smoke pot, okay? So that ship is not in port. But Merle said, well, we don't have any. Oh, my goodness. I'm stopping there. Stopping that conversation right there. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. So I took on another project as well, since we last had, you know, we're off last week in terms of talking about regular stuff. I found a air-to-water heat pump that has been damaged, and I bought it for scrap, and started, it had a leak. And I found the leak, and I think it's repairable. So we'll see. I'm not a AC technician, but I have done brazing. I have worked on refrigerant systems. This is not something I care to do for a living or anything, but I've done it. And I don't have any torches anymore. You know, years ago I had a set of brazing torches, a little oxyacetylene set, and I've had big oxyacetylene sets, but I don't have any. So I said, well, you know, I could get maybe some kind of turbo map gas torch. I've had those, and they were kind of, they worked. Because we used to braze heat exchangers up, too, for solar systems. But I said, you know, I want to oxy something. And I got looking around, and I found a small, you know, the standard size propane tank. They also make a map gas, and map gas torches are a little bit hotter there, but I said I want an oxy map torch if they make such a thing, and of course they do. And I found a company named Bluefin that makes them. So it's got a nice torch, small flame. I don't need a big. I'm not doing monster work. This is small. This is like a not even a quarter inch tube. It's a small tube that I have to braze. So. So I looked and I found it on Amazon. It's like $75. Okay, it's not bad. That's without the oxygen or the map. So I said, well, let me look around a little bit. I got onto the Temu. Temu's my guilty pleasure. It's kind of a stupid website, but it's interesting to me. And there was the same torch, $51. So I'll order it on Temu. It's the same torch. Bluefin, the company's Bluefin who makes it. And it came this week. And I brought it in the shop and I set it down. I was waiting for the gas to come, which I had to order separately. So I got the oxygen, got the map. And yesterday I said, well, why don't I put this together? Because at some point, I had a moment I was just running around. Let me put this together, see how it looks, and try the torch. Torch works great. I'm very happy with that. And it's got a little stand, holds the two tanks, and you sit it on the table, and it's upright. Except I'm looking at it, and it's upright. And if I look at the back of the stand, it says Bluefin, but it's upside down. And I noticed it will not stand up vertically. And the reason is that the frame that holds the two canisters, there's two pieces to it, and one piece is upside down and welded. It's not just screwed together. It's welded together upside down. And I can use it as is. It's not a big deal. But I said, you know what? This is going to be kind of fun. It doesn't take much to keep me entertained. I'm filing a thing with Temu. Obviously, you sent me a defective unit. The box looked like it had been banged up a bit. This has been returned, I think, before. So I sent a thing out to Temu, and I will report back to you if I ever hear from customer service. I have a feeling I won't. I could be wrong. But if there's ever a place that the terms caveat emptor, buyer beware, hold true, I would say it's at Temu. Probably Alibaba, AliExpress. My Chinese something, there's another one like that. Vivor, maybe a little bit lesser. But, But I'm hoping I've got to do a little bit of work on the unit before I can actually try brazing it up. The brazing rod is here. The oxygen is here. The map is here. The torch is here. The torch is like butter. It's just perfect. Perfect for what I'm going to be doing. I'm looking forward to seeing if I can actually make it work. It's Oh, it's a space pack. Space pack it's an American company, but I'm sure it's made overseas. 60,000 BTU an hour heat pump. So it's going to be kind of fun to see if we can make it work. If not, I can scrap it. Which, by the way, I got to go scrap some stuff, and that was kind of fun. There's a place in Holden called Apex Metals. A new place I'd never been to. Everybody was really nice to deal with. Sometimes you go to scrap yards, people could be a little surly. Had a good time. And I didn't come back with more than I went with. I was tempted. But let's see. Over here, we got a message. My 100-year-old house was not built very well. I think they used the whiskey level when they did my place. Yeah, I've seen that in my house, too. I mean, 160 years, there's been a lot of hands on this house. The one thing that sticks out like a sore thumb is the fact that there are, and it's got old doors. And I've had a few doors I've taken out. Some I haven't, and I'm saving them. Obviously, I'm not dispatching doors because they're 160 years old. But there's a door that goes from our living room to a foyer. And at some point, it had gotten cut down to fit a doorway and then was put into the doorway it's in now. And somebody scabbed a piece of wood onto it. But the piece of wood is thicker or wider than the door is attached to. And obviously, there's a joint there. And it's just kind of a, and it doesn't, does it? I don't think it lasts. It has a weird lock set. I'm going to try to retrofit it back to a more appropriate lock set. A lot of the door, actually, most of the doors in this house, the lock sets were just messed up. So I've been redoing the hasp and stuff. That all works, but the doorknobs are hanging. There's no you may not know this. I learned it just recently now. The round part that the doorknob goes into that's on the door is called a rosette. I didn't know that. So I've been replacing. I've got the original stuff and I'm saving it, but it's pretty funky. I've stripped paint off of them, and I'm like, you know what? Let me just get some new rosettes. I'll save the old ones. And I also got there's a joke here somewhere, brass doorknobs, solid brass doorknobs. And it just presents well. It's kind of spiffy looking. Hey, I got to take a break. I didn't realize we were running so late. It's 9:16. It's hot and cold. We'll be right back.
His menu in his hand, walking down O'Connell Street in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fook's. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein. Ah, ooh, werewolves of London. Ah, ooh. Ah, ooh, werewolves of London.
Back, it's 9:20. I came across this. This is a young lady named Sue Foley. She reminds me of Alvin Lee. You remember from 10 Years After? Yeah. On her Telecaster. Her pink Telecaster. All right, I wish I could play that for the whole hour. That's pretty good stuff right there. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. A text line 601-207-4478. We got the snowplow off this week. I think that's a good sign. Right? I don't think I'm tempting the fates. June 13th. Would be interesting if I was tempting the fates, though. And I have another complaint, because before Pete comes on, we got a couple of text messages, but I got a product called Ting, T-I-N-G. I came across it somewhere online, and it's a it monitors your household wiring, and if there's like an arc fault or something, it will report to you that there's a problem. And that's a great feature. It's a great tool. I picked one up. I found one on eBay. It was brand new. Got it. Put it in. Got it running. And I got a message from the people at Ting. Where did you get this? I said, can you send us a copy of where you bought it? So I got my eBay invoice, pulled it up, sent it off to them. They said, we're sorry, but you have to buy this through an authorized reseller. It's just a thing you plug in your wall outlet, and it monitors your house. And they have an app, and basically it's watching voltages. It tells you if there's an outage and if you're having a problem, which no problems were showing up. And they said, you can buy one. I said, I already bought one. Your insurance company might give you one for free, which it's a brilliant thing, especially if you have an old house. You don't know, we're talking about who did what over the years. A lot of people fancied themselves electricians. It's prudent to have a device like this to monitor your household and alert you over your phone if there's a problem. I mean, that is the big concern for me with old houses, is the electrical system, because that'll burn your house out. Now, certainly if you have a plumbing problem, that's an issue, but something's going to get wet. Yeah, your drywall might fall down. A number of things bad can happen, but an electrical fire, you got a fire, house is gone, end of story. So anyway, they weren't hearing it from me. So anyway, it's going to be what it's going to be, you know? I've got to live with it. So I'm not sure that that's the right thing, but I will accept it, I guess. But I said, I'm going to be sure to mention you guys on the radio. Hey, I got to take this music here, because we got something special coming up. And this kind of music, this is very exciting, effervescent music, can only indicate one thing at this point in the radio program, and that would be that Pete's on line 3, the governor's line. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
How are you?
I was just listening to you complain about the Ting thing again.
The Ting thing is, I can't say what I want to say, but...
Here's the thing, is you're not very good at complaining and taking people to task. Let me do it. So, if you can't sell it secondhand but brand new, then that needs to be labeled on the package somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? I would take it and go back. Well, you can't return it now because it's open.
Yeah.
But is there anything on the part package anywhere that says that this has to be purchased through a specific authorized reseller or something
I'll have
like that?
I think I threw the package away because it was working. You know, I was monitoring things and... I still might be in the garbage. I'm not sure the garbage went out yet. I'll have to root through the trash, which is
if it says so on the package, then you got to go back to the eBay seller. If it doesn't, I would just go back to Ting and take them to task.
Well, it was like
don't email them. Get on the phone and tell them you're in Maine, which is an implied warranty state, which coincidentally is for everything except for cars. But that means that anything sold...
Well, you got out of that one real quick.
Hey, I know it's a fact. Cars are as is. You picked it out, off you go. If you want a Yugo, you wind up with a Yugo. It ain't my fault.
Okay.
But that means that anything sold... Now, it wasn't technically sold in the state of Maine because it was sold through eBay, but if they want to continue selling their products in the state of Maine, they'll send you one.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's somewhere in Maine that they sell them.
Well,
all you got to do is drop the words "implied warranty state" and watch them all of a sudden kowtow to your needs.
Well, my read on it is this: the unit that I bought was sent to the person who sold it from their insurance company, which will give it to you, get you one for free. And of course, my insurance company is not one of those companies, but. Nonetheless, if he hasn't used it, if it has not been installed prior to my plugging the sucker in, who cares? Who cares what backup do you need for a thing you plug into the wall and you look at an app? None. You know, other than they're making more money, I guess. I don't know. I'm going to follow up with that because you're going to remind me on Monday morning, and we're coming down.
I'm not going to remember this later today, let alone Monday morning.
I'll remember. As Dick Hill used to say, he lives in a state of constant outrage. So yeah, I can do that. I can still be outraged on Monday morning. I got a text message here. I got to read it, and I'll explain to you in a moment, Pete. But I was talking about Temu. Says, speaking of Temu, Temification of America. Have you noticed the long handle spades now improperly manufactured? So when you step on them, your boot goes into a sharp edge instead of a rolled edge. No, I have not noticed that because I don't buy many spades, but. I bought a MAP oxygen torch setup for fixing the heat, working on the heat pump.
I'm sorry. Wait, you bought a MAP torch from Temu?
Well, it's a name brand. It's not a Temu brand.
Yeah, but it's not the actual name brand. It's a Temu made it and put the name brand on it.
No. But hear me out. It came in
on the same breath as talking about houses burning down. You're like, I bought a torch from Temu,
and it works fine.
I bought a gas appliance.
Can I finish? You know, it's my radio show. I should be allowed to talk once in a while.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm gonna get my hackles up while you talk.
You take it's out in the shop. Take a look at it. There's a back. The base. You know, there's two canisters. It's bolted together. One piece is upside down, and it's welded together upside down. So the print is upside down. You have to see it to believe it. And I think the box is still in the shop, so you'll see what it's supposed to look like. So I sent a warranty claim in to Temu because I need to have some entertainment value during the week.
You should send a letter to your congressman while you're at it. You're going to email it.
I might do that. They don't listen to me. Oh, God.
And, you know, I was a little disappointed in the election results. I didn't see my name anywhere, right? If you guys want more of the same, fine. Keep voting for all these people. If you want no taxes and health care to be affordable, write me in. Huh? Let's make something happen.
Yeah. Somebody sent a text. I love the governor's rage about Temu. Somebody else sent a message. Some ting isn't right. That's good.
I don't know if to dig at you or me.
My friend said
Ting.
He,
I thought ting. One of us pronounced something weird.
No, ting. My friend said said he wanted to return something from Temu. They said keep it and gave him a refund. Well, that's what I'm angling for, because I'll use it the way it is. You know, it was not horribly expensive, but what else have I gotten from them? That's I ordered some. Did I order? I think I ordered light bulbs from them. We'll see what those are like. See if they blow up or anything.
I sold, not to change the subject from Temu, but I sold a hybrid yesterday.
Yeah.
We sold a hybrid. You started it. I finished it.
Yeah.
I'm down to two, okay? I'm down to two hybrids. I got two hybrid RAV4s. I also have two gas Camrys, the four cylinders, so they get good gas mileage, too.
Hmm.
But this happens every time gas prices go up. Gas prices get to $4 to $5. I've been doing this for 10 years. $4 to $5 a gallon, and nothing will happen for like 3 or 4 weeks. And I'll just be spitting all over the place. Where is everyone? Gas is $4 a gallon. I got all these hybrids. And then everybody wants them. And then they're all gone, and then I'm going to spend the next 2 months scrambling to get more.
Yeah.
And that's we're coming into that turn because there was people emailing about the car that we sold yesterday while we were selling it, more than one.
Yeah.
So I had somebody offer to trade me a truck for one of the hybrid RAV4s this morning.
Yeah.
If you're thinking, hey, I don't like paying $4, well, you're going to pay $4 a gallon no matter what, but if you want a little bit better fuel economy, the two Camrys and two hybrid RAV4s. I got three gas RAV4s. Gas RAV4s get pretty good mileage, too. I like RAV4s. We have five of them, and it looks great, which means they're all going to sell, and it's going to ruin my lineup.
Yeah. But the
something to consider.
And we've got a – we don't have a deep a bench, if you will, of cars coming in. So it's going to be interesting what the next couple of – we may wind up selling HHRs and what was that – the car we always joked about.
I'll walk into the ocean.
Yeah,
I'll walk into the ocean before I start doing that. I can't even imagine the callback.
Oh, you know what? You were off on Thursday, and I was by myself.
Do the text message about some. I got an HHR and it's great.
I was by myself on Thursday, and this came up at auction, and I did not buy it. And I'm kicking myself. A 2003 Thunderbird convertible, and it went.
I'm disconnecting the computer.
It went for a good price, and I didn't buy it. So you need to thank me. B, I hate myself for not buying it because that's one of those cars I would like to have at some point. They're not great cars,
keep doing
but they're
this. You're
cool.
Like, this car's for me. This car, I'm going to get this car for me. Then you're like, well, I don't really want it.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I'm stuck trying to sell it. I'll be stuck trying to sell your Thunderbird. Look at it this way. That went for a great price. That should tell you something, because nothing's going for a great price right now.
Well, 2003 might, and it's probably rusty as hell, but and that stopped me from buying it. So you know, I do have some semblance of reality somewhere in the back of my head, but we got to take a quick break here, Pete.
Okay.
Okay, so you can stand by, right?
I'll be here. Unless somebody shows up, then I won't be here.
Okay. We'll be right back with
really
Pete.
Don't mind if you sit this one out. My words but a whisper, your deafness a shout. I may make you feel, but I can't make you think. Your sperm's in the gutter, your love's in the sink. So you ride yourselves over the fields, and you make all your animal deals, and your wise men don't know how it feels to be thick as a brick.
We're going to move back up. We're going to get Pete back online. Good morning again, Pete.
Good morning. Hey, you know what I did this week?
No.
I thought this would be a good one to mention. I made, all by myself, chlorine gas.
All right.
My bathroom is very clean.
Okay.
So let me explain so that everybody's groaning.
Everybody's
done
this.
So the bathroom...
Yeah.
The shower surround is like polyethylene or something. It's from the 90s. Nothing adheres to it, right?
Right.
So the caulking where the surround meets the tub is all glommy because it's silicone and it only kind of adheres to it.
And we
so
didn't do
glommy,
this.
It gets the little nicks in it, and then it gets the little bits of black still got, you know, the little mildew in it, and you got to clean it out with a toothbrush and the Lysol mold and mildew spray. So yeah. I'm doing that, right? Cleaning the tub, doing my best to keep up with it. I can't, but it's, you know, what are you going to do? So I have the thing that hangs from the shower that you put the soap on, that rack.
Yeah.
So the soap is on that rack. Now, I've gone back to bar soap. So I've got the soap saver, which is this little weird thing the soap sits on to keep it from, I don't know what it's, it doesn't do anything. But so what happens is the soap runs down through the soap saver, and then it lands on the fixtures. So I noticed that the tub faucet was dripping a little slow, and I'm like, oh, soap has gotten into the nozzle, the toggle that turns the water on, and it's probably affecting the gasket or the seal or what have you, and that's why it's dripping. So while I'm cleaning the bathroom, I'm going to get all this done at once. I'm going to save some time. I've got my Lysol spray all along the perimeter with the caulking, so I go get my spray bottle full of vinegar, and I come back in and I spray down all the fixtures so they'll descale. So I let that sit while I finish scrubbing the tub. I clean everything. I finish up. Now, you know everything smells like, after you clean the, in particular, if you're using something that has bleach in it, the house smell a little bit like bathroom cleaner. So I do that. About an hour later, I'm doing something else. I'm like, I don't feel very good. I feel kind of nauseous. I'm like, I'm going to stop eating dairy. It must be dairy. So literally, I'm screwing around for like an hour, and I'm like, it really smells like cleaner in here. So I go back into the bathroom. Now, let me give everybody a pro tip. If you create chlorine gas, don't do what I'm about to do. I turn the shower on, and I start spraying it down to get the cleaner smell out of the... I'm like, oh, the tub still smells like this. So guess what that does? It creates more chlorine gas. So I'm doing that. I'm like, and I'm literally thinking to myself, like, I should lie down for a few minutes. And eventually I decided not to. Like, I'm going to open a window and just see if I feel it. And then I opened the windows, and suddenly I felt better. And then the problem-solving part of my brain kicked in, which had been off all day. And it said, I wonder if I shouldn't have mixed things. Everybody's like saying, don't mix things together.
Yeah.
So, and there was a chart I saw online once of things to not mix together, and it showed 8 things. And I'm like, I've done half of those. So I've now done 5 of the 8, which was vinegar and a bleach-based cleaner, which does, in fact, create chlorine gas.
All right.
So,
that's
and it was the best
know.
Part was I had it was still cool outside because it was like Sunday last week, so it was down in the 50s or something.
Yeah.
So I had all the windows open and a fan going, and I'm not going to turn the heat on after that. But then it was like 58 degrees in the house.
Years ago.
So yeah.
I'm sorry.
I made chlorine gas.
Years ago, we did the house we built in Clifton had a quarry tile floor. And the guy who sold us the quarry tile, Klaus, the tile guy, said, you should put the, it was some kind of floor thing. Oh, God, I can't remember the name of it. It was like a wax, liquid wax. Mm-hmm. Put that on the tile before you grout. And because it was quarry tile and it's very porous, so it would tend to absorb the grout and would be harder to clean. He says, put this on. It was something like Pledge or something like that. Wasn't Pledge, but it was some kind of floor wax. So we put that on, and then you clean it with muriatic acid. So we did that. We did the coat of the tile, did the grout, let it cure. We get the muriatic acid, and we're cleaning off the wax. And at some point, we notice this blue cloud hovering over the floor. It was like, you know, if I wanted to believe in spirits, it was just this blue cloud. And your mother and I are kind of gasping for air. I said, okay, let's get out of this house, open the windows. It was wintertime we did it, as a matter of fact. But it was, muriatic acid with a wax and an outgas. You got to be really careful when you're dealing with stuff like that. You don't mix chemicals.
So it's hereditary. I learned this.
Yeah.
I got this from you.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. It was in your genes from 40-some years ago.
Yeah.
Almost 50 years ago.
Your exposure to muriatic acid made me predisposed to doing stupid things.
There you go. No, my predisposition to doing stupid things, you inherited. You didn't get it from your mother. You got it from me. I'm sorry. But I got a question, a message here, a question.
Take the good with the bad.
Yeah. Question about battery-powered push lawnmower. It's a Ryobi 40-volt from Home Depot. Had it 4 or 5 years. I use it to mow a couple of small areas that are too tight for the rider. I was mowing the other day, relatively hot. Started smoking from the battery compartment. Got hot enough to melt the surrounding plastic a bit. Stopped mowing, obviously. Let it be for a while. I didn't want to get too close for fear of possible explosion or fire. Took both batteries out later after they cooled down and tried to decide if I need a new mower. For the fun of it, I put the batteries in last night, and the thing actually worked, but I'm a little apprehensive about it being safe to use. Any advice?
Stop using it. I guess
it could be it overheated.
I know you'd keep trying.
Well,
now
it's kind of a fun challenge, and if you're doing it outdoors, you know.
This is anecdotal. This is not advice.
This is not advice, but this is what I would probably do. First, I would just see if the batteries take a charge. Charger should be outside. If you're trying to see if they'll take a charge, don't leave them alone. See if they charge normally. I'm more suspicious of the battery than the mower, but you know, I think those are brushed motors, so it could be that it's just it's time for the motor to have an issue. It would certainly need new brushes. That could be what's going on, but I wouldn't go too far with it in terms of trusting it or being comfortable with it. Do not leave the batteries in the machine. But first, I would just check to see if they take a charge, and do that.
I think getting a new mower is very cheap insurance at this point.
It is, really.
And also, once it starts smoking, stop mowing. Don't push it until it starts to melt.
You got smoke, you got to stop. And if it's melting things, it generally is a sign that something bad's going on. I'm going to guess that it's the mower itself, from the fact that it's melting like that. If it was the batteries doing what this you reported, they probably would have caught on fire.
If that does happen, let's say you're using an electric mower and it catches on fire, if at all possible, get it to the middle of somewhere where it's not near anything and immediately call the fire department.
Out in the yard.
Don't start trying to spray it with a hose and put it out yourself. No. It's not going to work.
Doesn't work.
Unless the person on the other end of the phone tells you to. Call the fire department immediately. I know it's small, but they will burn hot and fast.
Yeah. But if you can't
get it to somewhere off in the middle, get away from it.
Yeah, yeah. And really,
I've been thoroughly unimpressed with electric mowers. Every electric mower I've been involved with, like electric chainsaws are unbelievably great. Electric mowers, I just have not been impressed with. I think they're a gas thing only.
I think the ones with the 40-volt, dual 40-volt battery is not a bad machine, but
I've used them.
I'm not. We had an 18-volt one, and it was awful. I wanted to shoot myself every time I used it. It was just terrible. We got a message here, gas or electric for leaf blowers. I would say electric, just because it's less hassle. And if you're not doing a lot.
Definitely the 40-volt electric, because we've got an 18-volt electric leaf blower, and it does work, but you can tell it's not quite as much oomph as it should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would go 40 volt on an electric leaf blower.
Yeah, I was using.
And also, pro tip: if the snow is fluffy enough, you can use it to blow snow off cars.
Yeah, it doesn't work real well. I've tried that too many times. I think I've done it with. I think I've done it with gas, and it still didn't work well. So that's obviously an issue. I got a text message here. The Yugo topped the list of Click and Clack's worst cars for the millennium. I believe the quote was totally unencumbered by the engineering process. I don't think they were the worst cars ever, but they weren't a great car.
It's my go-to example
The Yugo
is always right and matters of taste.
The Yugo really was a copy of Yugoslavian copy of a Fiat. Say what you will about Fiats, they're not the best cars ever made. They're kind of cool, they're kind of cute. But that's as far as it goes. The rest of it is just like torture. Do you remember the first Fiat that we bought as car dealers? The one that didn't run? It was a cheap...
The one that we replaced the alternator on and it took six hands.
We did the starter first and it took me days to get the starter out. No, we did both. I thought it was a starter because it wouldn't turn over. And then I was afraid maybe it was seized up, but it turned out... It was the alternator had stuck and wouldn't let the car turn over, but it took three of us to get the alternator out. one of which was a machinist. Now, our friend Nat helped, and we still were challenged to get it, get the thing out of there. Cool cars, that's all. Nothing else good about them. I do look at them at auction more than I should, but I'm not going to buy one. It's just fun to look at.
The person who bought that was local, and it hung in there. I used to see it buzzing around all the time.
Yeah, it was a great car once it was fixed. And we bought it as is, not running, as a little bit of a crapshoot. It was cheap enough that it was worth a try. It was actually more than probably I should have paid for it even. But it was, when we got it running, it was just a cool car. It was white with red interior. And that was kind of fun.
I thought it was green.
No, that was the second one we ever bought.
That was
the
second one. That might have been the last one.
No, the last one was the electric one. Remember, I bought an electric one. You know, I really want to go. Well, I wanted to see what they were like, just because I was very uncomfortable with the gas Fiats in general because they're so hard to work on. I thought maybe the electric one would be kind of cool. And if you open the hood on the electric, to me, as one who has had a lot of electric cars over the years, over the decades, they should be simple cars. You open the hood on any electric car, and it's just as jam-packed as a regular car. And I think they do that on purpose, so you have to take it to the dealer. That may be a conspiracy theorist, but that's my theory.
I think it was the CEO of Ford recently was basically like, you shouldn't work on your car yourself. He's like, we're all for the right to repair, but you should have to bring it to the dealer. He's like, you should be able to get it repaired at my shops.
Yeah, and I understand that, but man, you got to take that with a big grain of salt when you walk in the door and it's $200 an hour. Silence from Pete. We do have some cars. How many cars do we have out there, Pete? I lost count because we sold one. I can't do that arithmetic.
I got five RAV4s and two Camrys.
Okay. We'll have let's see, what's today? Saturday. We hope to have another Prius out there, maybe two Priuses out there by the end of next week.
Yep. Yeah. A little bit older, but, I mean, you know.
Well, we got a 13 and an 18.
40, 50 miles per gallon.
We've got a 2013.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the 18.
Yeah, yeah. So
the 18 is going to be a rebuilt title, but the price will reflect that. Rebuild was done in-house, so we know everything that was done to it.
Yeah, yeah. And
that's going to be good. That's low mileage, too. That's like
65,000 miles. That's a nice car. Yeah. I'd like that car.
I don't know what the price is yet. So everybody tells it once it's ready, it'll be out, and the price will be up and all that good stuff.
I hate telling people ahead of time we've got something coming because they always want to know the price, and we don't know till it's been through the shop. And that one's
everybody going, wants what's not out yet.
Yeah, that one's going in the shop Monday, so we'll know by the end of the week what's going on with it. But I had it out on the road the other day for the second time, and it's like butter. So. Anyway, what else we got? That's about it. Pete's going to be there till 3 today. And people do come in just to meet Pete. And who could blame him? Right?
I think people come in to meet me more than you.
They do.
Well, I'm friendly. People like talking to me. All they got to do is say healthcare. I'm like, have a seat. I got a few things to talk about.
I got a message here.
Well, everybody's going on. That's the big thing. That's the big thing. Everybody this election is going on about Medicare for all. Well, how about we go back and figure out why it costs so much to begin with?
Okay.
Why don't we start at the root of the problem instead of... All right, never mind.
All right.
What's the text message?
Deep breaths, Pete. Deep breaths. I don't need to tow very often, but would like a winter beater capable of towing a snowmobile or side-by-side. Would a Sienna or a Honda Odyssey get the job done? Trucks are too expensive. Yeah, I think they would.
I think so.
You can Google the tow capacity, but I would say... something like a snowmobile, excuse me, or small, you know, like a garden trailer, if you want to call it that, you know, something you have a mower on, no problem. You could do that with a Prius. You know, we've had Priuses with tow hitches.
I wouldn't do like a pair of snowmobiles. Or, I mean, you know, refer to what the capacity is, and then if it doesn't already have the tow package on it, whoever's putting it on, ask them, yeah, too. You know, do you think it's going to be able to tow X amount of weight without problem?
Those are pretty substantial vehicles. They're not, you know, they're not small Mickey Mouse cars. Those have got some moxie behind them. I would probably want to have all-wheel drive if I'm towing, especially if I'm towing snowmobiles in the winter, and they are available.
And I'll throw this pro tip out there. Even though it's going to be a beater, I would say, especially if you're going to be towing, keep up, and everybody should do this anyway, but keep up on your transmission maintenance, fluid-wise.
Mm.
Get the fluids changed.
Fluids changed and undercoat it.
Filter.
Hey, I got some...
annual undercoating, yeah.
I got some Cosmoline. Those of you old enough to remember...
Cosmoline
is an undercoating. I haven't tried it yet. I squirted some on my car just to see what it came out like. But I've got to get a car on a lift and do it to see what it's like. It gets pretty good reviews, so we'll see how that one goes.
So. Have you tried mixing it with vinegar?
I'll get you for that. We'll get vinegar. Maybe we'll do a little olive oil and vinegar, a little vinaigrette maybe.
We'll bring it in the shop. We'll close all the doors and windows, and I'll go to work.
Okay. All right, we're out of time, Pete.
All right,
you have a great week. Everybody, Pete's going to be there till 3. Come meet him.
Hot dog.
He'll sign your autographs as Governor Pete. All right. Pete, thanks.
See ya.
Everybody, have a great weekend. See you next week.
I need T. Rubble's more or less be all the me, I guess, when the sun doesn't shine. But there's that pocket full of miracles, and with a pocket full of miracles, the world's a bright and shiny apple that's mine, all mine. I hear sleigh bells ringing smack in the middle of May. I go around like there's snow around. I feel so good. It's Christmas every day. Lee, I've